Hold on to summer with WBEZ at the Evanston Folk Festival this weekend. We're hosting tent talks with folk artists Bonnie Kolak, Sam Beam, Roseanne Cash, and more. Info at wbez.org/events.
I'm your host, Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. It's a battle that started as soon as President Trump took office, when he signed a series of executive orders directing that hospitals nationwide be cut off from federal funds used to provide care for transgender youth. And since February, not one, not two, not three, but now four Chicago hospitals have canceled patient appointments and stopped performing gender-affirming surgeries. And it's pretty abrupt each time it happens. But the need for services like hormone therapy and puberty blockers, well, it doesn't just stop. So where and who can young trans patients turn to? Well, enter a collective of doctors and nurses across Illinois who don't rely on that federal money anyway and can help families keep this specialized care going. So here's what you'll get from this conversation. Our panel will explain, one, the dangerous domino effect when services for trans youth suddenly become unavailable. Two, how a rapid response team is working hard behind the scenes to connect families to alternate care. And three, how a new lawsuit from the Illinois Attorney General is demanding that hospitals keep providing gender-affirming care. At the table was Asher McMaher, Executive Director of Trans Upfront Illinois, Michelle Vallée, a parent of a trans teen, Dr. Jessica Lipinski, family physician who provides gender-affirming care, and Kristen Schorsch, WBEZ health reporter. The doctor started the conversation by explaining what gender-affirming care entails.
Gender-affirming care is kind of a spectrum term. It involves any kind of care, including medical, surgical, psychological, social, legal care that encompasses allowing for someone to be affirmed in their proper gender. So from a medical, for example, perspective, that would be, could be hormones, could be puberty blockers. From a social perspective, that could be allowing the child to go by, their name, preferred pronouns. Legally, it could be changing, like gender markers, legal name changes. And then surgically, of course, that's kind of one of the more intense type of options. That would be like surgical removal of, say, chest or breast tissue or top or bottom surgery.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to hear from you on this one, Asher, and particularly what you think the masses don't understand about gender affirming care and the young people who rely on it.
Yeah, that's such a great question, because so many people, especially in the Trump administration, believe that surgeries are happening to four-year-olds, right? They say, oh my God, there are these trans kids, they're so young, and we're cutting off body parts. That's actually not true,
that's
right?
That's the narrative we've been hearing.
Exactly, that's the narrative. And so, it's so hard to get people to listen who don't want to. But, we don't see anything surgical happen until they're in their late teens. And to give context, they don't just go, hey, I turned 16, so now I'm getting my breast tissue cut off. These are kids who have to go through mental health providers, medical providers, that their dysphoria is so pervasive that it is medically necessary for them to get this procedures. Now, of course, there are times where people pay out of pocket, they go to private surgeons, they're like, hey, 16, 17, I'm going to do this. But most of the time, that's actually not true. A very, very, very small percentage of trans kids are getting surgical options, period, before the age of 18. And the ones that are, this is literally life-saving for them.
Yeah.
In terms of things like blockers, yes, they can be considered surgical. And that's simply because kids don't sit still. So they'll do the implant, which is the same as the birth control that you see that gets placed in an office for an adult. It's kind of the same procedure and device, and that allows them to have a blocker for 1 year and then have it removed. But there are other options like shots, etc., for that.
Yeah. Dr. Lipinski, what can you add to that, just so we get a better understanding of the difference between hormone blockers and surgeries?
Yeah, great question. So kind of like Asher said, surgeries are very rare, because, if you're thinking about going down the line of surgeries, before they even get there, they have to get the medical evaluation. They're usually seeing us for at least a year with some type of medical intervention, whether that be puberty blockers or hormones. They have to get a psychological evaluation. For anyone under the age of 18, we follow the WPATH guidelines as well as the Endocrine Society guidelines that ask for that letter of support. So, like was mentioned, the care that we're doing is very methodical, and you know, we're careful. We want to make sure that we're doing the right thing for these families, for these, you know, young adults, kids that are coming to see us. So yeah, surgery is usually, it's a difficult to get. There's not a lot of surgical options even before all these new regulations came in. So if someone was able to get it at an earlier quote age, it's usually because it's life saving. So yeah.
Kristen, let's bring you in here. Tell us the reason that UI Health, which is the latest hospital to join this growing list I mentioned here, what are they giving for why they've canceled surgeries?
Well, they're citing federal actions. So the Trump administration, as you alluded to in the executive order, has essentially, in what the lawsuit alleges from a lot of the attorney generals around the U.S., is intimidating providers of gender-affirming care, threatening to withhold funding. And so for a hospital like UI Health that relies heavily on federal payments, that's a really big deal. So what UI Health did is they recently ended gender-affirming surgeries for patients younger than 19. We saw Lurie Children's do that earlier this year. We have seen the University of Chicago Medical Center end all pediatric gender-affirming care. So that would be blockers, mm-hmm. hormones, surgeries. And Rush is not taking new patients for hormone therapy, but they haven't provided surgery in quite a while for patients younger than 19.
Yeah. And when this happens, Asher, I mean, there is a domino effect, right? You've got patients having to essentially shuffle around. I know you hear these stories, so let's hear some.
Yeah, so, you know, we have been at Trans Up Front at the forefront of this fight. We organized the protest at Lurie. We broke the news at Lurie. We broke the news at UI. We broke the news at Rush. I mean, I knew about everything weeks before it made it out. And we serve trans individuals across the whole state. And we're not just watching a domino effect of like, okay, you lost care, let's find you a new one, right? But we're seeing loss of life. We're seeing increase of suicide ideation. We're seeing an increase of mental health, severe mental health needs. We're seeing increase of need of other services because these kids are basically being told that they don't deserve access to care, that they don't deserve to be validated. They don't deserve to have equal rights as everyone else does to take care of and be validated and seen in who they are. And so our organization has received now over 200 emails in the last 2.5 weeks.
Wow.
Of families begging for help. And we get everything from, this is my child, this is their age, what they love, they just want to be this when they grow up, and I'm so worried for them. These parents are terrified for their children. And so myself, as well as Jessica Lipinski, Dr. Lipinski is on the line, we have been working on finding other options, other care for these kids so that no one is left behind.
Yeah, and we'll talk more about that in just a moment. I want to bring Michelle into the conversation. Mm-hmm. Because we recall, I mean, we've had you on the program before, Michelle, and gotten your story. But if we go back, Lurie Children's Hospital was the first in the city to do this, right? To cancel gender-affirming surgeries for patients under 19. Your 18-year-old son is a Lurie patient.
Yes.
Where he gets testosterone. What do you think here about the fact that this has continued? Multiple medical centers are doing the same thing. They're scaling back.
I think parents expected that. I would go back briefly around gender-affirming care generally. I think it's important to recognize that this care, trans youth are probably some of the, if not the most scrutinized patients in healthcare today. And it is extremely individualized care. I think people treat, because of the disinformation that's out there, they treat trans youth as though they're assembly line patients, and they're not. Every kid is treated for what they need. There are some kids that pause puberty mm-hmm. and then decide that hormonal therapy isn't for them. There are some kids that need hormones earlier because they want to go through puberty with their peer cohort. I think what's missed in these conversations is that trans youth are individual patients like every other patient. I go to my doctor from my specific body, and every trans child that's treated with gender-affirming care,
mm-hmm.
it's individualized to their specific needs.
And so regarding when we lose that yeah. as a possibility.
Yes. And regarding hospitals sort of falling in line, I think parents have been preparing for that ever since Trump was elected. I think there's a large amount of disappointment and frustration in that Illinois touts itself as having some of the strongest laws on the books that will protect providers who provide care that is federally being debated.
Mm-hmm.
And there's that sense of betrayal that I think I talked about the last time we spoke, Sasha, that these, you know, my child's provider has known my child since they were 11 years old.
Yeah.
And to see a hospital back down from care that he's accessed for all of his life, or most of his life, is in the truest sense of the word, very heartbreaking. It makes me and my son very sad to know that the rhetoric around allyship is strong and the action has been disappointing.
Mm-hmm. It's not matching up, is it?
No.
Dr. Lipinski, I want to know more about what's physically happening here when we lose care as a person that's transitioning. What are the physical effects? What is happening to our bodies?
Great question. So, you know, it depends on, you know, where we are. So there's a few ways of looking at this. So one of the ways is you have, you know, kids who have, let's say, a puberty blocker that if we're doing the actual implant that is stuck in their body that we've had, that doctors will refuse to take out because it's considered gender-affirming care. So now they have a foreign body. Eventually, it no longer is going to release the actual medication that stops puberty, but it is a foreign body that's inside this, you know, the kid. So, you know, that's like one of the worst case scenarios where that could end up being a medical emergency because our body in general is not happy with having foreign objects, you know, inside it. Say someone were on the injections and they were to stop the injections, the natal puberty would start. So all the changes that we worked hard to make sure that they wouldn't happen would start. So say, for example, we were trying to ensure that someone's voice didn't drop to such a low pitch that, you know, it was not distinguishable, that would start dropping. Mm-hmm. So your hormone levels will actually start going up. So if you are testosterone dominant, then testosterone will start raising and doing all the androgenization or testosterone effects. If you're estrogen dominant, then your estrogen starts going up and you'll have a, you know, period, you know, so cycle. So all of that starts, which in and of itself is very dysphoric to these patients, because especially if you were on it and you had this stop and you had the hope that you would be able to then start the correct hormones, that's taken away. Now, let's take the case scenario where someone is on hormones. Now, if someone is on hormones and we stop their hormones, because what we do with hormones is we're basically changing the balance of how much estrogen and testosterone there is. So
right.
Someone that was estrogen dominant is now testosterone dominant. Well, we take the testosterone out, so the testosterone drops and the estrogen starts going in. There are certain parts of hormones that are irreversible, meaning once the change happens, that change is already there. So deepening of voice, let's say hair growing in certain areas, that's already permanent and that was part of the transition process. Now, if we take it away, those things will stay, but then the other estrogen-based hormone will start causing the period to come back. So you end up putting a person in a situation where they've already gone through part of their, you know, mm-hmm. transition process, and then it just abruptly stopped. Awful effects on mental health. That's an understatement to say, but we definitely see, you know, risks of suicide. So it is absolutely horrible once that stopped abruptly.
Yeah, and Asher, I mean, just like you alluded to earlier, the mental health impacts are deep here.
They are, yeah. I mean, I'm a trans person. And I have a trans child, and I'm married to a trans person. I do have children who are not trans. I think, like, a lot of the media thinks that my whole family is trans. I do have cisgender children as well.
Okay.
You know, I've watched my daughter grow up. She's 4 years old, socially transitioned, and now she's 13. She got approved for HRT in January of this year, and actually her physician at UI hid her blocker in their office because they were so worried with this Trump administration what was going to happen.
And HRT being, is that
hormone replacement therapy? So she's going on estrogen, so she transitioned binarily to female, and she's always known who she was. I mean, she was 3 years old, and someone say, "You're a cute little boy," and she'd yell at them, "I'm not a boy, I'm a girl." Like, she knew.
Really?
And
early?
I mean, these kids know who they are. Like, I used to joke, I wish that I was as self-assured as my daughter when she was growing up. I mean, these kids truly know themselves. Mm-hmm. And it's our job as parents, it's our jobs as community members, as those uplifting that community, to believe children when they tell you who they are.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so often, I mean, I talk to parents. We've gotten over 1,000 requests for help this year within our organization. And so often they say to us, well, we're a sanctuary state. And they really trusted that we're a sanctuary state. And they feel betrayed and devastated, you know, just as was said earlier. And these kids have been told by their parents, oh, we live in Illinois, everything will be fine.
Right.
And we're seeing real, true consequences. And our organization is dealing every day with those consequences. And we're doing our best to keep moving forward and make sure these kids know that they're wanted, they're seen, they're valid, and they need to grow up to be the incredible humans they're meant to be.
Yeah. We're supposed to be a sanctuary state. What's the governor saying about that?
Yeah, well, I'll just back up real quick. The reason people are saying that is because there's a law in the books called the Illinois Human Rights Act, and it right. prohibits healthcare providers from discriminating against patients for a variety of reasons, but one of them is for gender identity. And so as we've seen hospitals scale back what kind of gender-affirming care they're provided or cut back completely, like the University of Chicago Medical Center, people are wondering why. I asked the attorney general multiple times for months to please explain that to me. What am I missing? What are the families missing? Mm-hmm. If we're missing something. And did not get much of a response. There was some mention of, well, this isn't discrimination against Lurie Children's or Northwestern Memorial Hospital, which did end up setting up some appointments when Lurie canceled gender-affirming surgeries for people younger than 18. But then Northwestern quickly canceled those appointments.
Right.
So back then when I was asking about it earlier this year, I was basically told, well, you know, these hospitals are being threatened by the federal government with, you know, criminal investigations, prosecutions, and things like that. We recently just had a lawsuit on Friday that the Illinois Attorney General now is a part of.
Yeah.
And I asked him that exact question again. And this time he told me hospitals, by law, are not required to provide every single medical service. They don't have to deliver babies. They don't have to provide gender-affirming care. So you taking that away, that service, he says is not discrimination, especially if the federal government is threatening you.
Yeah.
Governor Pritzker has defended the hospitals too, essentially saying, if they are being threatened by the federal government, you know, he doesn't think it's discrimination. The hospitals have cited, right, like the threats and how much they rely on federal payments to survive. So essentially they're saying if we don't do this and we don't cut back gender affirming care and we lose all of our federal funding, mm-hmm. that affects every service in the hospital. Like, can we even function for all other types of care? So there's this real kind of messy discussion happening.
Yeah, we had hoped to have the Attorney General on the program join us for this conversation, but he was not available. Asher, I want to talk about these rapid response team and learn a bit more about how they work. How are you doing this? How are you vetting providers and, you know, getting folks routed to them for care?
Yeah, I mean, So it's been a couple weeks. And so, you know, our organization has always provided gender affirming care navigation. It's something that we've always done, but we'll get like a, hey, my child just transitioned, looking for a doctor, need a mental health provider, give me some recommendations, you know, nice and easy. Well, University of Chicago, when they sent out their MyChart message, instead of giving them referrals, if someone calls in, they gave them our information. We found that out afterwards via an Instagram message from one of their care coordinators. And thankfully, we have incredible connections around the state and around the city. And we had an emergency meeting at 8 o'clock at night with elected officials, with medical providers. Dr. Lipinski was on one of them, and our team at Trans Upfront. Mm. Between our three boards, we have 21 members, not including our volunteers. So we put together a rapid response. Within 24 hours, we were live on our website where you can request for information. And right now there's about a 48 to 72 hour response delay. And we are still helping match people. We've gotten about 200 requests now.
Wow.
We're at about 130 confirmed that they were able to find other providers based on their recommendations. We have about 40 right now who are now waiting for surgical options. And what's really heartbreaking is a lot of these people waiting for surgery are 18, 19 years old. They're not children, mm. right? These are adults. Once you reach 18 in the United States, you are considered an adult. And so that has been really heartbreaking for us to say, even in private insurance, even self-pay, we're having a hard time finding
and
people.
And you're hearing from people out of state too, right? Requests are coming from outside Illinois?
Yeah, we are getting them from Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Iowa.
Wow.
And that's what we've always done. So we've been helping families that come into our state and that are in our state since the beginning of this year.
Dr. Lipinski, you are part of this mission too. Tell me how it works on your end as being part of the rapid response teams.
So for my clinic, we opened the clinic about 3 years ago as a direct primary care clinic, or DPC. I used to work at a big hospital system as a professorship, teaching residents, doing inpatient, outpatient, and ultimately decided that the way our healthcare system was working just wasn't working well for people. So I quit my job and started this clinic. Now, I never imagined I would be here 3 years later, but we always had three services in our clinic, which is gender-affirming care, we do primary care, and we do psychiatry care. So we've been doing gender-affirming care since the beginning. We've worked with pediatric, adolescents, adults, geriatrics since the beginning. So we've been set up in a way that we could take care of these patients. We have an in-house pharmacy. We could do in-house labs. We stay away from, you don't use your insurance. You could use your insurance if you want to pay for medications or labs, but the membership is not insurance-based. So that's one of the reasons we're still protected and are able to stay open. Mm-hmm. So fast forward to where we are, even before kind of these closures, we already got an increase in patients asking to get care from out-of-state patients coming in, asking if we could help take care of them. And then, Asher and I we knew each other from before, and they invited me to come to one of these meetings and asked, do we have the capacity to continue helping to take on more patients? And I said, absolutely. At the end of the day, this is work that I'm very passionate about, and it is important for us to continue getting care. One of the reasons I decided to go out publicly, because before we were very, quiet about the work we did, was when I heard that there were, I think at this point, 26 confirmed suicides. For me, that was just heart-wrenching. I'm like, I can't continue to work, kind of undercover and do this work. We need to start letting patients know, families know that we're here for them. We're going to take care of them. That's been my calling.
So just so we're clear, so you mentioned that membership, right? So you charge a monthly membership fee for young people seeking gender affirming care, and families who can't afford that, are you working with them?
Yeah, we're working with them. Jessica or Dr. Lipinski started a nonprofit. We have what's called the Sanctuary Fund, so you can donate to either Trans Up Front or Dr. Lipinski can talk about their nonprofit, and it goes directly to subsidizing this cost. That way we can make sure that no matter what, starting with patients for us that currently access Medicaid, so those who are lower income, that's our priority, and we're helping cover those costs as well as Dr. Lipinski's nonprofit is as well. We're trying to bridge those gaps. We're basically restarting from the ground up the abortion fund, right? Except the amount of people who support trans youth is minuscule compared to those that support abortion. Right. So we are rubbing pennies together to ensure the lives of these kids.
Yeah, it's really a patchwork here. What do you think of this rapid response system, Michelle?
I think it's great.
Yeah.
My 18-year-old has accessed most of the transitional care he needs at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
He is still on testosterone and obviously needs that care.
He's off to college soon.
He's off to college.
And you're preparing a go bag.
We are, yes.
What does that mean? What's in there?
He'll have cash and he'll have a supply of testosterone and medication and IDs and passports, obviously. And I will say, even, what's happening in the United States, had affected where he considered going to college. He's going to Vermont. He can be in Canada in 45 minutes. We have friends up there that have put together, people we can call.
Mm-hmm.
And so he would be at least stable and taken care of until we can figure something out.
So you've thought of an exit plan.
Yes. I think every parent of a trans child has imagined the U.S. collapsing in a way that makes it entirely impossible for their child to live here, and has done the appropriate footwork around passports, extra cash and savings,
wow,
stockpiling medication.
And figuring out specific locations.
I have Canadian friends. He would actually be entering Montreal, but I have friends in Canada who have friends in Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
It really is sort of that patchwork of making sure your child is safe first,
yeah,
and then getting, you know, focused on how that what that means for college, what that
right
means, you know, how he continues to grow up and
right
pursue his own passions while potentially not being safe in America.
So many moving parts here, Kristen, plus this lawsuit, right? What is next? What are you keeping an eye on?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm keeping an eye on the status of gender-affirming care for young people in this city, in this state. Also, this lawsuit. So yeah, Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul has joined many other states in suing the Trump administration for overstepping, they say, their authority to essentially threaten investigations and criminal prosecutions on gender-affirming providers. So I want to see where that ends up. Like the point of that lawsuit, which they point out that the federal government has reimbursed for this care, it is legal in many states. There's no federal ban on this care. The point of that lawsuit is to stop the chilling effect
mm-hmm
that you're seeing happening in Chicago, with hospitals scaling back that care. So I'm definitely going to be keeping an eye on that. You know, typically lawsuits take a while to wind themselves through the court.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if there's going to be more legal action and just how families are protecting themselves and making sure they have access.
We'll leave it there for now. We've been speaking with Kristen Schorsch, WBEZ health reporter. You can see her great reporting online right now at WBEZ.org. Dr. Jessica Lipinski, who's a family physician providing gender-affirming care. Michelle Vallée, who's a parent of a trans teen. And Asher McMaher, who's executive director of Trans Upfront Illinois. Thank you all so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced and mixed by Linnea Dominic and edited by Dan Tucker. If you liked this conversation, please consider rating this podcast or leaving a review. It helps other listeners find us. Or consider subscribing so that you never miss an episode about how federal policy affects local residents. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll meet again soon.